Hello, peoples of the internets, and welcome to One Footer in the Unfinished Troika. That's right. That's three podcasts for the price of one, and still no adverts in any of them. It's amazing. I have with me today a couple of usuals, and also an unusual. First of all, we have Marcus.
Hi.
We have Andy.
Hello!
And because Paul is on a cruise, because he's over 60, he has to go on a cruise now. And also, he doesn't like music, which, as you will find out, is going to be very pertinent to this week's episode. So he didn't want any part of this. So instead, we brought someone who does care about these things. It's Richard Rutter.
Hello. Thanks very much for having me.
Hey, Rich. Thanks very much for coming.
You're welcome.
I've been pant-wettingly excited all week about the idea of doing a cross of three different podcasts together. When we chat about the podcast, we have a little message group. And the thing that kept coming up is we kept talking about music. Well, we did, but Paul didn't. But we kept talking about music. And then someone said, I think it might have been Andy, well, why don't we record an episode about music? Because this is a shared interest, and it might give us a little bit of a different kind of podcast, our usual kind of ramble of, you know, AI going into Winnebagos, going into...
Wrexham Football Club.
Wrexham Football Club, exactly. So what I've done is I've asked all of us here to come up with three Desert Island songs. So three songs that, I mean, to be honest, my favourites change every week, but these are ones that I'm pretty set on. And I don't know about you, whether you felt, everyone else, whether you felt it was hard to come up with just three, or whether, you know, you would prefer to expand it to 20, but we're gonna keep it down to three.
John, it was brutal. Brutal trying to find just three.
I was thinking of it less as Desert Island Discs and more like, do you know that movie The Martian, where he's stuck on Mars and the only thing he has is the captain's disco music?
Yeah.
He's longing for something else to listen to. And I'm thinking, maybe this is the... I'm stuck on Mars, and this is the music that I'd want to have with me.
Yeah. Pretty good. So desert planet rather than desert island.
I think desert planet.
Desert planet music. Nice.
Although from what I hear, there's plenty of life on Mars.
Oh. Good little music reference.
I've just realised I didn't even consider Bowie. Not one.
Well, I think this is the problem. I think... You know, each of us are going to have artists that we love that we've not represented. And there's a song in particular that I was thinking of, but I've already had it twice on Troika, so I kind of felt I had to come up with something different. So
I know what that is.
I'm also painfully aware, thank you, someone listens, painfully aware that, you know, going down the list of our choices, there's not a lot of diversity, but... You know, it does vary in genre a little bit.
On that subject, because I've probably got about 25 songs here written on this notepad of like that I've got down to three. I'm going to ask at the end when we've all been through all of them, if you had one more, you're not allowed to talk about it more than a minute or whatever. What would it be? Mm. So there's your thought for the end of this, and my choice. Is because mine's all very kind of very, yes, white old man. But the one that I will pick as my fourth option is a bit different and a bit groovier, really, because I quite like groovy stuff. But when it gets down to like serious, well, to your favourites, they all have to be quite epic, he says, even though his first one isn't particularly epic. But anyway, so yeah, have a think about that, what your number four might be.
Okay.
And something a bit different.
So, Marcus, can we kick off with you?
Yes.
Do you want to introduce your first track that you've chosen?
Okay. The first track is, and it probably could be one of 10 songs from this band. The band's Steely Dan. The song is Ricky, Don't Lose That Number.
So, do we know what this song's about?
A bit. Most of their songs are kind of just sort of like being cool and saying cool shit and being on drugs and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. But apparently it's about when Donald Fagen, who's the lead singer, piano player in Steely Dan, met an artist called Ricky, somebody that escapes me, and he handed her his number, but apparently it could have been he handed her a joint or something like that. Anyway, and it's a little bit of one of their kind of cool early 70s kind of... cool is the word that I keep coming back to. And I'm not suggesting for a minute that I am therefore cool because I picked a Steely Dan number. The reason why I picked a Steely Dan number, and this probably certainly applies to the third one I'll come on to, I won't mention what that is yet, is if I've only got three to listen to, I want something really interesting. I want some music. I'm going to dive out there and say we've got quite a lot of long songs coming up here. Obviously, I'm not listening to all of them in full length here, but that kind of suggests that we want, because we've only got three songs, we want a lot to listen to. And Steely Dan are, you know, they're jazzers. They revel in their brilliant musicianship. They have the best players in Los Angeles playing on their records. So you've got a kind of, there's a lot to listen to from that perspective. Also, even musically, they kind of almost deliberately made it complicated, which you could argue that that's jazz in general, really. Although
nice,
and I love that. I love that kind of, you know, ridiculous chord progressions and changes and all that kind of stuff. And if this is all I've got to listen to, then I want that in my ear. I want interesting stuff to go, oh, they've gone that way. Why on earth have they done that? That said, Ricky Don't Lose That Number, A, is not particularly complex musically. It's got that wonderful piano run into the chorus, which is kind of, that's quite jazzy. But and I'm about to contradict myself on the fact that they were overly complex and, you know, up their own arse a bit. They made sure that they had a banging chorus on pretty much every song they wrote. And this song is a brilliant example of that. There's a band that I go and... A tribute band, and I am not a fan of tribute bands at all. Can't stand them, except for the Steely Dan ones. There's a band called Nearly Dan who I go and see play in South London.
I was about to ask, is there a good pun? yeah.
And they are stunning, and you love it because I'm a massive fan. I know all of their music, but there's a sing along quality to it. Which you don't get from going to see jazz, for, you know, real jazz, if you like. So it's a treat. It's a real treat. You've got all of this kind of complexity on one side, and yet you've got sing-along choruses on the other. And I think that's enough blabbing on from me on that song.
Let's take a listen.
So it's not about fornication then, it's just about literally giving someone's phone number.
Yeah, maybe. Go and look it up.
I think everything's songs about fornication, that's the problem.
Yes, or the lack thereof, one way or another.
So Andy, can we come to you next? What's your first choice?
So, yeah, this was an interesting one. I don't know what your process was when you had to kind of come up with your top three, but the first thing that I did was to go to Apple Music and to look at what it said I listened to most of all. But that tends to be kind of quite cyclical. And I've been listening to a lot of Megan Maroney, a country artist, recently, and Willow Avalon, who I'm going to go and see in concert next Monday. But I wouldn't add them on my playlist. So then I started thinking about, well, you know, what do I just ask Siri to put on when I'm kind of in a long car journey? And then I had this revelation that the track that I think I've listened to probably more or as much as anything else over the last kind of 60-odd years is Meatloaf's Bat Out of Hell. And it's a weird track because I think that if you are of a certain age, you are genetically programmed to know all the words to Bat Out of Hell. And you should be able to sing along to it any time that it comes on the radio or, you know, enters your ears. Even if you haven't listened to it or heard it for like 20 years, you still know all the words to Bat Out of Hell. I'm looking for some sign of recognition, but you're all looking blank.
Andy, I'll support you on this one. When I was a young lad, a teenage guitar player, and I was into rock music big time, you know, I was discovering all the 70s rock bands and all that kind of thing. I can remember seeing a live performance of Bat Out of Hell on, I don't know, the Whistle Test or something like that.
Mm.
And it blew my mind because it was like there two guitar players, you know, two keyboard players, drummer, percussionist, three backing girl vocalists, massive production. And it was just like, that's what I want to do. I want to do that. So from that perspective, it blew my mind. Meatloaf's not my favourite. He just isn't.
No.
But I think he's a little bit Marmite. I think some people absolutely adore him and others don't. But I can remember loving that live performance of the song. Wait,
1977.
It probably wasn't that old, but yeah, for me.
But Meatloaf is not my favourite artist, but... And we can probably do another podcast about albums at some point in the future. Mm-hmm. But it is one of those tracks that fits so beautifully on an album and is complemented with, you know, with all the other tracks that are kind of in the narrative. And I think that that's one thing that you might spot when we start going through the other tracks that are on my my playlist, is that I really like tracks that actually have a story behind them. You know, there's some kind of narrative there, rather than it just being kind of, you know, ambient music or about the technicalities of a jazz chord progression or whatever it is. It's the storytelling that I really like about songs in general, and in Bat Out of Hell in particular. So, yeah, if you're younger than... Take a listen to this.
Are you going to sing along to all of these? You are. Right?
That's going to be tricky for some, isn't it? Growing up, I remember seeing the Bat Out of Hell cover. I hadn't heard it, but I would see it in like in Woolworths or something like that, and I would think, "Oh God, this must be really heavy metal." And then I when I finally heard it, I'm like, oh.
No, it's quite camp, really, isn't it?
It's, I mean, yeah, wouldn't it be fair to say it's rock opera?
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, Jim Steinman writes those like those massive songs. I don't mean massive hits, but like massive songs, as you were saying, Marcus. It's just like there's so much going on, and they just drive along so fast that you can't, even if you don't want to like it, you can't help but kind of tap along and get carried along by the stuff that he writes. It's pretty phenomenal, really.
Yeah, yeah. There's no one else like him at the moment. That's for sure. Who's next?
Well, Andy, you were mentioning about. Well, Andy was mentioning about like what criteria did you use to choose the three tracks. So pretty much I was looking for what are the things that, you know, if I don't know what to play, what are my favourites to go back to? Different songs create different kind of moods, like someone I need to relax, I'll listen to a certain song. Sometimes I just want like something a bit more upbeat or... something to sort of like, you know, stimulate kind of creativity or something. But I also kind of thought very roughly something old, something midway-ish, and something new. So I'm going to start off with my oldest choice from 1966. Big Beatles fan. My mum got me into Beatles. Obviously, they'd split up about 2 years before I was born. But... she very much was into that later period. You know, Penny Lane and Strawberry Fields, that double A side, was her favourite. So I inherited that love of the Beatles from her. But and there's so many good Beatles songs. But what I particularly like about this one, which is Tomorrow Never Knows, this is the last song on Revolver. It's an absolute banger. It was groundbreaking at the time. Especially for the Beatles, you know, here's a song that A, doesn't rhyme. It's not about love. It's got a really bizarre kind of like skipped beat. There's a really nerdy thing you can do. There's a really old like demos of the song. And the earlier versions aren't that kind of exciting. They're kind of, it's a very, very standard kind of drum beat. But by the time they finished it, they had got this weird, Ringo doing this weird skipping beat. They were adding tape loops. There's a bit that sounds like a seagull, which is Paul laughing, and it's sped up. And they just layered upon sitars and orchestras. And it's weird because it's kind of like a drone.
You know, over one chord. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
One chord.
But it just, the rhythm absolutely carries it, and the whole kind of the weirdness of the tape loops. So, yeah, Tomorrow Never Knows, that's my first choice.
I was going to say.
That's good. Yeah.
Relax. A tougher one. There's some of these that I'm going to be very impressed if you can sing them after. Bearing in not actually listening to them on the recording. But I think Tomorrow Never Knows was potentially. This is a big statement, but I love a big statement with no evidence. The most ahead of its time song that there's ever been. Possibly Hendrix, Voodoo Child would go along that because that sounded like something, you know, it could have been released today. But yeah. Tomorrow Never Knows was just like, wow. You just suddenly got this different picture of a you know, the makeup of the minds of the band, or certainly of some members of the band anyway. Brilliant.
Yeah, and obviously LSD was a big part of that.
When I was listening to it the other day, I was thinking exactly that. It's like this, it doesn't sound like something from the 60s. It could be, it still could be right now. It is incredible. Yep. And I'm famously not a big Beatles fan, but they've got such a huge body of work, and there are gems like that which you just cannot dismiss, as much as I'm not a fan of Strawberry Fields and that kind of stuff. But that, you've got that other extreme of the Beatles, like that song there, and it is phenomenal.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Do you think that's one of the reasons why you like experimental music so much, John? Soundscapes and stuff.
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, to be honest, when my mum got me into the Beatles, I wasn't aware of Tomorrow Never Knows, all that kind of stuff. You know, Penny Lane, especially, it's quite a conventional pop song. You know, it's got that kind of slightly...
It's a Paul song.
...psychedelic edge. Yeah. But it's... But the kind of weird stuff like, you know, Revolution Number 9 and Tomorrow Never Knows, that was something I discovered much later. I don't know. I mean, I would say that I don't listen to, you know, solely experimental stuff. But yeah, this one just is just one of those ones you just keep coming back to.
Grand. Good choice. Over to Rich.
You've got your first choice. What are you going to play?
I'm going to play Ride's second best song.
Oh. Right. Oh, hang on.
Second best song.
Yeah.
The first one being Vapor Trail. But this one I absolutely love. It's Leave Them All Behind from the second album. The 90s was really formative for me in terms of music. Although that probably started in 1989. My younger brother, I should add, brought back 3 CDs from college. And I think there was the Wonder Stuff, REM's Green, and it might have been the first Wedding Present, or the second Wedding Present album. And I've got, the Wedding Present is kind of like officially my favourite band. I have got almost every single thing they've done, and that's right from sort of the mid-80s. But there's no Wedding Present in this list. And I kind of wanted to pick songs which just make me smile as soon as I hear the first note, the first bar. And this is one of those. It starts off with this amazing sort of bit of keyboard, and it just brings me straight back to Reading Festival when they were, and they kicked off with this song, and then it just follows with these big drums, and it's this kind of 8 minutes and 17 seconds of kind of shoegazy noise, and I absolutely love it. Even now, it still just makes me smile. But thinking back to that Reading Festival, the headliners that day who followed Ride directly were Public Enemy. So you got quite a difference going on in one festival, going from shoegaze through to Public Enemy. But both bands at the time, probably at the peak of their powers. And this song just fills me with joy. I absolutely love it.
So why this one and not Vapor Trail? Is that because you don't think this is the second best? You think this is the best? Or
I think there's something, Vapor Trail is such a fantastic song. It's almost a defining one for Ride. And I think somehow they almost suffer from, like, their first single, perhaps on their first album, being what will forever be their best song kind of thing. But I think there's something actually a bit more engaging about Leave Them All Behind for me. As lovely as Vapor Trail is, but it's quite, I don't find it, it doesn't G me up as much. There's a bit more to it. Like, it's a bit noisier.
It's gutsier, isn't it?
It's a much
beefier sound, a bit more confident, bit less dreamy.
4 minutes longer, you know.
This is not a song that I am familiar with, or a band that I'm familiar with at all. So, should we take a listen?
Leave them all behind. Having heard that for the first time, Andy, what do you think?
It's not my cup of tea.
All right, now I love, and this is going back to sort of the days of The Who and things like that, the kind of keyboard intro, big guitars, go for it. Oh, fantastic, love it.
Well, I can do big guitars, big keyboard intros if we're talking about, I don't know, Child in Time by Deep Purple or something like that. But, yeah, I'm sorry, this one doesn't ring my bells.
It's a class choice from me. I love Ride. And
it's a banger. But yeah, that's the wonderful thing about music, isn't it? There's so much music, so different. And
I think the other thing is that I mainly miss the 90s.
Oh, right. As in you weren't present in the 90s.
No, I don't think I was particularly present at all in the 90s. I think I was in a fug in the 90s. So even...
Well, I suspect most of Oasis. Ride's listeners were in a fug as well.
Yes, we were.
You know, the whole Britpop thing and Oasis and Blur and you know, all of those things all actually just really passed me by. I was not a musical listener in the 90s, so I'm sure I've missed out on a bit.
So let's go around and do our second choices. Marcus, what would you like to introduce as your next one?
Right. This one, I picked this song for multiple reasons, which I'll get into. One of the guys at work said, have you ever heard this album? And it's an album by an artist called Fink. And I'm struggling to remember the title of the album. Never mind.
Is it Hard Believer?
Hard Believer. Thank you very much. Yes, the album's called Hard Believer. And I put this on sort of a bit of a late night thing, just kind of quite loud, enjoying it. And just the whole album is just gorgeous. That's just the right word for it. It's epic. He sings just the sound of his voice is, for me, absolutely wonderful. And this particular song, it's another quite long. It's not necessarily complicated in the way I was describing Steely Dan. It's not jazzy at all. It's just kind of, I think it's the same three or four chords all the way through. It's big, epic, slow, you know, kind of gets into your soul kind of stuff. And I loved it, and I've loved it for years. And I thought, and I'm going to say, the song is by an artist called Fink, and it's called The Green and the Blue. Maybe I'll have a listen to a bit of it now.
And on paper seems so definite. Every innocence and simplicity is intricate. And it's in your hands, it's harder to forget. And on paper seems to fit the permanence of it. The green and the blue.
Well, for the first few years of hearing this, I thought he was talking about the earth and the sky, because it's a very beautiful record. It's a beautiful sounding thing. Again, the word epic comes to mind with this particular track, and I thought, well, if it's epic, he's talking about the earth, the green and the blue. And I can't remember how I found this out, and you guys may know this, but it's a song that was originally written by Amy McDonald, and he's covered it. And the green and the blue is not the earth and the sky. I don't know if any of you actually know what it is.
Is it about fornication?
Nope.
Oh.
You're never going to get it if you don't know. It's Celtic and Rangers.
Oh. Which, so it's sectarian.
It's a basically. Sectarian thing, yeah, sort of Scottish sectarian thing, which kind of adds a really different kind of colour to it for me. But it absolutely underlined, and this is the opposite of what Andy was saying, is I don't listen to the words on anything. That's not it's not true. It's not to say I don't listen to the words, and the words are really important. It's like, you know, just Donald Fagen singing a cool line about let's play some games or whatever. I love the set. I love the coolness of it, but it doesn't matter if it doesn't mean anything. I really like Bon Iver, and I could have had one of his songs as one of the songs we picked today. I've got no idea what he's on about on any of his songs. Not a clue. Genuinely not a clue about what he's singing about on any of his songs. And the same thing, and this song with Fink underlined that for me, because like, I just thought, he's singing about the beautiful sky and the mountains, and now he's talking about football sectarianism.
This was completely new to me. I hadn't heard of Fink, certainly hadn't heard the song, but I really, really enjoyed it. I really liked it. It was just, it just grabbed me straight away.
Check the whole album out. It's gorgeous. Right, over to you, Andy. What's next, monsieur?
When I was a really small boy, I
can't imagine
got
that little tiny
into listening to ELO, the Electric same. Light Orchestra.
Absolutely the same.
And I think it's really interesting that if you listen to, as I have done fairly recently, I've listened to every ELO album in order. You know, they start off with this kind of very orchestral kind of, you know, violins and cellos, and it's very kind of, you know, pseudo-classical or whatever at the beginning of their career, the first couple of albums. And then there's the obvious album, which I think everybody's probably heard, the Out of the Blue album. So, you know, Mr. Blue Sky and all of that kind of stuff. And then they got into a period, you know, with the Diary of Horace Wimp and those kind of things that we might remember from Top of the Pops, which were really not my kind of favourite stuff. And then, you know, they'll kind of fade away. In between those two kind of eras, there was three albums. There was Face the Music, On the Third Day, and this album called El Dorado. And I keep banging on about albums, but this is an album that you have to listen to kind of all the way through, El Dorado. And it's Jeff Lynne's concept album where he's talking about this dreamer. And the standout track, I think, on this album is Can't Get It Out of My Head. And I think I've listened to this track more than I've probably listened to any ELO track over the years, including the kind of the sing-along poppy ones that you play in the car on the M6. So, Can't Get It Out of My Head. Have a listen to this.
On the water, I saw the ocean's daughter walking on.
So you were an ELO fan, were you, Marcus?
Absolutely, still am. But I have to confess, I had never heard this song until you put it on the playlist. I kind of just knew. I've got Mr. Blue Sky on 7-inch vinyl somewhere in a cupboard somewhere, bought when I was a kid. I'd kind of forgotten about Jeff Lynne, but he was on. He played the old crusty stage at Glastonbury, didn't he, 2 or 3 years ago? Mm. And it was like, bloody hell, he wrote some good songs. Was my, you know, as I'm watching it. And that's kind of to the point of, and then he was playing, he was going to play live, he was doing a sort of a tour of the UK the following summer or something. And I thought, oh, I'd like to go and see him. And then it was like, you know, £3,000 a ticket. And I thought, well, I won't bother with that. Then I'll watch it on the telly. No, great. Yeah, cracking guy. My favourite Jeff Lynne work is what he did with Tom Petty.
Travelling Wilburys.
Well, no, the Tom Petty solo stuff, Full Moon Fever, that album, all the Won't Back Down, and various songs off that are escaping me.
I didn't know he was involved in that. That's interesting.
Or we can hear him sing.
Well, he was involved with the Surviving Beatles as well, because he did a lot of production work with Paul and Ringo and George. He was a, yep. a you know, great fan of George. Mm. So did a lot of production work on kind of, what was that track that they kind of brought back from the dead when they
did Free as a Bird
album? That was the one.
Yeah. And just generally, you can see a kind of a line from the Beatles to ELO. And obviously, yep. by the time it gets to ELO, it's all sorts of different instruments that were sort of, you know, really synths was a big one. But essentially, because ELO were one of those bands that I've been sort of neutral to good. I've never sort of sought them out and listened to them. When I've heard them, I'm kind of, oh, yeah, it's all right. Mm-hmm. I really like this track.
Yeah, yeah.
I think maybe because it didn't have the pomp of things like Mr. Blue Sky and those sort of things, you know, and I think the songwriting just sort of shone through because of that. And also because I think you just get used to things like Mr. Blue Sky, you know, it's quite ubiquitous. It's, you know, it's just one of these things you just hear a lot. But this is, yeah, this was great. Really enjoyed this one.
Yeah, I did too.
Moving on, John.
Yeah, so I'm kind of not sure which one of my two to go with next. I think I'm going to go with the track Chemin de la Baie by the Besnard Lakes. So this is my new track. This is the one that came out last October. They're a band that I discovered about 13 years ago now. Just happened to be listening to Mark Radcliffe show in the afternoon on the radio, and they played one of the songs from their album at the time, and it just really struck with me. They're a Canadian band. They've kind of got this sort of psychedelic rock thing. Jay Slasek, the lead singer, sings in this falsetto that's like like, I suppose, Brian Wilson, you know, it's that sort of vibe. So it mixes a few things, and they're also either he's really into Prince, and this is probably one of their most kind of like mainstream poppy kind of ones. But when this came out last October, it was my favorite song last year. Played it to death. It's got a big chorus. And I saw them live a couple of weeks ago, and they played it live, and it was just, you know, just even better. And there was a guy in the crowd behind me who just every time he hit the high notes, he just shouted, I don't know if I can swear on this podcast.
Of course you can.
He just shouted, fuck me! What? Listen to that falsetto! Fucking bloody hell! Whoa! Like this. I mean, he was, you know, had a few jars, but he was just completely taken back by how good the lead singer was live anyway. So let's have a listen to Chemin de la Baie.
I really like it, mate.
Yeah, it's right up my street as well. Yeah. I really liked it. I've never listened that much to Besnard Lakes, but I will be listening to them more now.
Same. Never heard of them before. So,
well, there's an episode of Troika, which is all about the Besnard Lakes. It's just one of these things that they're a band that people don't know about. You know, I've been to gigs of theirs where there's been a handful of people in the audience. Fortunately, recently when I've seen them, the audiences have gotten much bigger. But, it was one of those people that I wish more people knew about. And they've got quite a big body of work now behind them. But certainly this album last year, Besnard Lakes of the Ghost Nation, that was one of my favourite albums from last year as well. I just take every opportunity now to promote them and to get the name out there. Rich.
Yeah, so my second choice, a little bit more contemporary than 90s ride, Hot Chip. Hot Chips are a band I suppose I've got into a bit more recently over the last few years. This is a track called Mr. Bliss from their most recent album. And it was always a bit of it's a grower in both senses, in that the first time I sort of heard it, it was kind of, yeah, this is nice. And then it moved on to the next album track. But then it kind of caught my attention a bit more and a bit more and a bit more. And then the song itself just layers up ever so slightly all the way through. And it just feels like it's building. But what it does for me, it's a couple of years ago, and this is going to sound really privileged and wanky, but whatever. I was lucky enough to go on a sailing holiday. yeah. It's like, it's authentic. So I was on my one and only sailing holiday with some friends of mine from uni. My mate Dave is a skipper, and the rest of us, there were five of us on this boat. Which it shouldn't work. So it was like five middle-aged men on a boat for a week. We should have been just at each other's throats after about half an hour. But we know each other really well. And it is something about this song where I just picture it the whole time, where we're sort of sailing along on this crystal blue Mediterranean. We're on our second Mythos and it's 11:30 in the morning. And it's not a care in the world because we just basically went on holiday to get away from our families and to get away from work and just like just not have to care about anything about how do we get to the next island by dark. And it just reminds me, it just makes me happy when I hear those first few notes, and then you just listen to it and it just kind of builds up and builds up. It just feels a bit like the boat picking up some wind and just going a little bit faster across the sea. So yeah, I'll just have a listen. It fills me with joy, this one as well. I would lose my gold, my diamonds. I would lose my gold, my diamonds. To prove myself worthy of this. To prove myself worthy of this. I'm Mr. Bliss, when I'm feeling used. I'm Mr. Bliss, turn me back to me. I'm Mr. Bliss, when I'm feeling used. I'm Mr. Bliss. Take me back to me. In the blackest night, I will be seen. In the darkest time, I could be clean. Rich, this is my favourite of the ones that I didn't choose.
Uh-huh.
There you go.
I think it's fantastic. It's surely a drug reference, though. Surely.
Quite possibly. Are we talking about LSD again?
No, I think it's ecstasy, isn't it? But whatever.
Who knows, yeah.
I don't know.
But I'm a bit like you with that, Marcus, where I don't really listen to the lyrics. I might sing the words without stringing them together in any kind of sense. So they just sort of happen as part of the music.
I know of Hot Chip, seen them live on the telly a couple of times and was very impressed. I was like, oh, a Hot Chip song. Don't know this one. And I was like, yeah, I love this. So, yeah.
I'd also say it didn't sound like Hot Chip. You know, it's not. You know, if I had been played this blind, I wouldn't have recognised Hot Chip immediately.
No, probably not.
I think it's quite, you know, it's quite a different sound for them. It's nice.
They use a vocoder in it occasionally, and it just feels like entirely appropriate and just not really annoying and grating like you hear. Yeah. Just like that's Cher. Just part of the instrumentation. Yeah.
Anyway,
let's move on. We've got the last choices of everyone to go through, and I particularly want to hear Marcus talk about his third track.
Right, yes. Third track is The Firth of Fifth by Genesis. Let's just play a bit of it now.
Sirens cry.
because I think you need to have heard some of that before I start going on about it.
It's a hard one to do in a little snippet because it changes, doesn't it?
Well, yes. I go back to my original point about having something that's very... there's a lot to it to keep me amused while I'm listening to my music. I've only got three songs on my desert planet. Again, I probably could have picked other early Genesis tracks, but this is my favourite one. I don't have a particular story around it. I just think it's fantastic. You know, I think you said earlier, well, I just like it's a great piece of music. I love the piano intro and the fact that it kind of drops into a bit of a kind of rock bit with Peter Gabriel's voice being very Peter Gabriel-y. Love his voice over Phil Collins. Not that I've got any. Early Genesis had the kind of this wonderful situation where they had Peter Gabriel and Phil Collins singing on the records. If you listen to Carpet Crawlers, they're doing this fantastic harmony all the way through it. But I'm not talking about Carpet Crawlers, I'm talking about Firth of Fifth. It's just a fantastic example of what they were about back in the early to mid 70s of making songs that were interesting. Time changes all over the place, going from 4-4 to 7-8 to 15-16, all this kind of thing. And being proud of it. And we don't care. Yes, it is a bit knobby and a bit proggy, if you like. But so what? We're really clever boys. And that's worth noting, actually, about them. They're famously from Charterhouse School, all of them apart from Phil Collins. But to have a band of young men all coming from a school to have the level of musicianship that, and not just their ability to play, but their ability to write really complicated music as well, is quite phenomenal. Usually it takes the likes of, with Steely Dan, one of my earlier examples, they're all session musicians. I mean, the two guys who kind of headed it up met each other early on, but they had to kind of get the best of the best. So Genesis just happened to meet at school. It's amazing. Supertramp was similar. It's like, you know, how did this level of musicianship come out of just public school? But anyway, I think it's just a fantastic experience to go from the start of the Firth of Fifth to the end of it. It's got a wonderful guitar solo in there, which is an echo of an earlier flute solo that Gabriel played. It's just changing mood all the way through it, and it's just really interesting and complex. And one of the great things about Genesis, this is my final point, similarly to Steely Dan, I mentioned that Steely Dan wrote banging choruses. Genesis didn't write banging choruses, but they wrote stuff that was pleasingly melodic, whereas a lot of their contemporaries in the prog world didn't. It was quite a hard listen. It's like, come on, get to a good bit. But their stuff was kind of, for the majority of the time, the early stuff was interesting and melodic.
There's two particular bits in this that I really like, and it's the sounds of particular instruments. One is the early synthesizer. There's just something about that really kind of like, it's almost like not just nostalgia, but it's a very deep memory of like that time of and that particular sound. And then the flute section.
Yep. It's wonderful.
There's a band around now, I should know, the Rich Knows, Midlake.
Yes.
Who, that flute section, you know, that could be Midlake now, you know, and it's very much kind of what they were doing there in the early 70s. Really like that one.
Andy, your last choice.
My last choice. So, it's not in the 1970s.
Wow.
It's a newer thing. It's a newer thing. And the little story behind this is that, I suppose it'd be about 20 years ago now, we went on our first big road trip across the US, rented an RV, three of us piled in the back. And I actually created a little playlist of country music tracks, being so ignorant about country music that I didn't even know at that point that country music didn't really come from the parts of America that we were traveling through. Anyway, We listened to this, and I've got to say, probably all three of us really, really got hooked on listening to country music. And I think that since then, I've listened to country music more than I've listened to any other genre for the last 20 years or so. And I know people, you know, it's quite polarizing. People think that country music is still, you know, Loretta Lynn or Dolly Parton or, you know, Tweedy McTweedy or whatever the, you know, those kind of country and Western artists that, you know, my mum's husband would have had on an 8-track cassette in his car. But contemporary country music is really, really vibrant. And again, a lot of it is down to the storytelling. And this particular track is by Brad Paisley and a guest spot from Alison Krauss. It's called Whiskey Lullaby. And it's a very sad song. But there's one moment, I won't spoil it for anyone, but there's one moment when Alison Krauss begins to sing her verse. And it is the perfect note. It's that note that she starts with that literally still, and I must have heard it like, you know, 8 dozen times, sends a real shiver down your spine. It's a brilliant, brilliant country track. So, yeah, Whiskey Lullaby. Have a listen to this. La 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 la.
The rumors flew, but nobody knew how much she blamed herself for years and years. She tried to hide the whiskey on her breath. She finally drank her pain away a little at a time, but she never could get drunk enough to get him off. Finally drank away his memory. Life is short, but this time it was bigger than the strength she had to get up.
It's funny because when you say it's a sad song, it's like the saddest, isn't it? I mean, it's like it's the shit. The sheer tragedy of someone who's spurned drinking themselves to death, you know, thinking about their their ex, and yeah, it's quite depressing, isn't it?
It's not a happy listen. Did you pick up on that note?
Yes, Andy, because you've mentioned this song before, and I thought, what's he on about? So I went and had a listen to it again, and it's like, yeah, the way she comes in is quite wonderful. Big fan of Alison Krauss.
Rumors flew. I can't do it.
But I'm a big fan of country music as well, but I'm very picky about what I like, and I tend to only like, and this is quite weird, I only like women singing country.
Yes.
Don't like the way men sing country. It's all a bit too fucking macho for me. Whereas women sing country, First Aid Kit are one of my favourite bands of the last 10 years. I know they're Swedish, but they sing country. They just do.
Yeah, I'm sort of not generally a big country fan, but a good song is a good song, and that is a good song. Yeah, it's a good listen. I mean, I quite like what I guess gets termed alt country for some reason, Bill Callahan and sort of early Lamb Chop, and all Lamb Chop, actually. But that's different. It is very much a different genre, but I do like that. But this, yeah, it's a fantastic song. There's no getting away from it. Enjoyed it.
Well, Marcus, if you want a bit of a delve and you haven't listened to Miranda Lambert, well worth a listen. I would say Megan Maroney is really good. And Ashley McBride. So three women country artists that are all active right now doing great stuff.
Lovely. Thank you, Andy. Over to you, John.
Okay, I'm going to introduce my last one, which is by the band Stars of the Lid. First of all, I'll explain the band name, because I've seen people get confused about why they're called that. It's all about the private light show behind your eyes. So when you close your eyes and you see the stars speckled inside your eyelid, basically. Okay. That's where they came from. They started in sort of about 94, 93. They're a duo. They started off making quite kind of dark ambient music with just guitars and feedback. And as they sort of went along, they became more and more orchestral. So they kind of get called new classical a lot these days. And this particular album, which is their last one, is my favorite album of all time. So if Andy said about, you know, talking about albums, this would be my Desert Isle album. It's called Stars of the Lid and Their Refinement of the Decline. And it's got all sorts of things to talk about on this. But all I'm just going to say is there's one track in particular that, you know, if I'm like worried, anxious, distressed, just need to relax, just need to calm, I listen to Even If You're Never Awake. So it's a bit of a long one, but it is it is relaxing, but lacking the narrative that Andy would prefer, I think.
Well, we have gone left to right or right to left, whichever you look at. You couldn't get further apart, really.
No, this is the sort of music that people that hate me would play in the car on a long journey.
Really?
Oh, wow.
I'm not a fan. I'm sorry, you know. It's not my cup of tea.
Well, if Hot Chip hadn't come along, this was number one.
Oh,
yes.
That's good to know.
Excellent.
It's wonderful. I love shit like this.
There's other tracks of theirs that you can talk about. Like there's one called Don't Bother They're Here. And it's actually, it's a slowed down version, re-recorded of the track Send in the Clowns.
Okay.
So the idea is send in the clowns, don't bother, they're here. And it's just, they create this beautiful piece of music using the melody from Send in the Clowns. But yeah, I won't go bang on about Stars of the Lid because I could do that for ages.
Is this who you've done your
website so about? I got sort of in contact with a member of their marketing team and got blessing to set up this archive of all their live recordings. To basically just a bit of background, they're a duo, but one of them died 3 years ago now. So there's this sort of hope that there's an album that they both recorded together before he died that might get released someday. But, you know, until then, this is the last thing that's ever been released by them. So, starsofthelidforever.com.
Fabulous.
So, Rich.
One more to go.
You've got the honour of closing us out with the final choice.
With what to some people might be the least accessible song of the entire playlist. I don't know. This is a track by Snapped Ankles. Don't Google it. They've made the most ungoogleable artist name. And it's a track called... let me get it right because I can never quite remember. Johnny Guitar Calling Gosta Berlin. Now, it's fairly recent. The last, I don't know, maybe 5 years old, this... off Snap Ankles' first album. I really liked them. I went to see them live at at Hove not so long ago, and it was an absolutely massive gig. It was just, musically, I mean, there weren't that many people there. It was a full room, but it was huge, just lots and lots of noise. I wanted to get something in this playlist that, again, I just hear the start of that, especially when the bass line comes in. It just makes me sort of bob up and down. And it does just like do that incessantly for, again, coincidentally, 8 minutes and 17 seconds. And it's nowhere near as musically interesting as the Genesis track, which is also very long. It just does that. But then I love a motoric beat. This is very much a sort of a contemporary kraut rock track. And disregarding the fact it seems to be set in Berlin for some reason. But I just love it. But anything with a motoric beat like that, that just goes ding, 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 just drives along. It just always grabs me straight away. But it is one of my favorite tracks. And when it comes on, it stays on all the way to the end every time. This is Snapped Ankles and Johnny Guitar calling Costa Berlin.
Johnny Guitar calling Costa Berlin.
Chaps, honest opinion.
Well, I loved it. I mean, it's
right up my street.
Yeah, it was the one artist, I think, Fink as well, because I hadn't heard of Fink, but the one artist I hadn't heard of. So I'm going to have to go back and, you know, discover their other stuff. But this was great, like, you know, a real breath of fresh air, and something it was nice to have a bit of, again, something very different on the playlist as well. How did you come across them?
I was trying to think of that today, and I can't remember. So if I can't remember, it probably means it came from my brother, who is, I mentioned earlier on, from like the late 80s, he's basically continues to be my source of musical knowledge. He's always sending me stuff, like playlists that he's put together. Well, I have a listen to this, Rich. And he nails it kind of every time. I just go deep. So he probably sent me this track maybe, and like nothing else. Now I've got all of their albums, and I've been to see them about 3 times. And I get a bit obsessive with some bands that way.
You're dead right about the bass line when that comes in. That is the best part of the song.
It's just massive.
It's like, awesome. Rickenbacker, I reckon.
Yeah.
Now we get into the nerdery.
Sounds like a Ricky to
me. I mean, they've got a big whole sort of shtick of the homemade instruments and things like that.
All right,
which they do sort of have. I'm sure that's like a proper bass, as you say, it's not a homemade one. But they have things like a thing that sort of looks a bit like a tree, which they start hitting with drumsticks, and they've got all sorts of other stuff going on stage. But other than that, it's kind of what it is. A lot of it is just like you heard there, very much sort of modern day kraut rock.
Kraut rock, thank you. I was trying to think about the genre, but yeah, kraut rock.
This was really hard because I do tend to listen to a lot of music all the time, and I could, if I was thinking about artists or bands that mean a lot to me, there should have been some Billy Bragg on there. Mm. But I probably wouldn't take Bill to my desert planet. I would probably say that blues is my second favorite genre. I've been listening to a lot of blues recently. You know, I've been really getting deep into Muddy Waters and Sonny Boy Williamson and stuff like that. So there ought to be some blues on there, but I don't know whether I really want to take any blues to my desert planet.
Well, Andy, have you thought about one more to take, as I asked you at the start of the show?
Well, I do think that it has to be a long one just to make it worth taking. So, true to type, no surprises, I don't think. But I'm going to take Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven.
Yeah. I was playing that just the other day, actually, and it's still good. it's sort of cheesy, and you know, you've heard it so many times, but it's still too good to just be cheesy. It's it's fantastic.
The outro I just absolutely love. The start is like, but you know, it's like that's used to get thrown out of music shops for playing that in my youth.
Yep.
Anyway,
it's another one like Firth of Fifth that's almost sounds like three songs put together.
Yeah.
You know, it has that kind of variation about it. But I just still think about the whole Wayne's World, you know, when he starts to play the opening chords in the guitar shop and there's a big sign saying, "No Stairway Denied." But it is a classic one for people to try, isn't it? I was just going to ask Andy about the lack of Motorhead.
Yes, of course.
I did expect Motorhead, Ace of Spades or something.
I think that I would probably have a Motorhead album in my top three if we're taking albums.
Well, we'll have to do it again, won't we?
But I can't think of a specific Motorhead track that I would probably want to take with me, even Overkill or Ace of Spades, sadly.
Yeah, it's that difficult thing of like one track versus like a whole body of stuff. Yeah, that is hard. Marcus, have you thought of anything?
I have.
Extra?
I have. Well, I could read out about 25, but I won't do that. This is a band that my son got me into called Fat Freddy's Drop. They are a New Zealand-based kind of reggae band, probably for want of a better thing. And as I said, I don't know if this was before we started recording or not, all of my choices are very kind of big and deep and serious and all, maybe not Ricky, don't lose that number, but there's not a lot of groove in there, and I really like kind of music that grooves, so this is the most groovy of the other things that I wrote down on the page, and it's a song called Wandering Eye, so I highly recommend that.
John?
It's a really hard one, this one, but I think if we're talking about being on Mars, I'm going to want to get the most out of my one track. So the one I'm thinking of is almost 20 minutes, I think it is. It's another Stars of the Lid one, and it's called December Hunting for Vegetarian Fuckface. But it's... so I get 20 minutes worth. That's like four songs in one go, so that's good value. Yeah,
Wandering Eye is a good 10 minutes as well.
Yeah, there you go. I'm sure even on Mars I'd get sick of it eventually, but yeah, that would be my other choice.
Rich,
what about you?
Got one?
Well, I've chosen one which is only 4 minutes long, actually. It's a track called Anything by Martina Topley-Bird. Martina, I guess, more well known for working with Tricky, particularly on his first album.
Yep.
And I picked this one because it's a contrast from the other three. The other three are uppers, whereas this one is very much a downer, I suppose. She's got such a lovely voice, and this is such a sort of sad song. But it's one of those sad songs that feels uplifting at the same time. You know, it's like it gets your emotions going, but kind of in a good way. So for me, Anything by Martina Topley-Bird.
Well, this has been a really nice change of pace. Normally what we do on One Footer is that we have a topic that we all a little bit passionate about. We all talk over each other. And it's, you know, we usually have to try and come to an end at some point. This has just been a bit more relaxed, a bit more kind of like, finding out new stuff I haven't listened to before. Mm-hmm. Music's probably my favourite topic of all time anyway. So this sort of thing is just ideal for me. Love having a chat about what people like about their chosen music, and just hearing why it means so much to people. I think that's great, and I would just love to do this again. But we'll probably do the albums one. That'd be quite interesting.
Yeah, will you come back and talk about albums, Rich?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, yeah. I just wanted to say I was glad to hear that Paul is alive and well, because I was a bit worried this might be a last of the summer wine situation where one of the old boys pops his clogs and they have to wheel in some replacement.
Completely unemotionally. Yeah, right, Rich, you've just taken over now.
Yeah, exactly. It's more like Spinal Tap with a drummer. Yeah, you know, it's like, you know. Yeah, yeah. We now have to get a Rich replacement for the next one. another gardening accident. Thanks very much, chaps. Thanks for all your time, and we'll see you next time, God willing.